I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. It's an absolute joy that you're there. And believe me, it makes enormous difference to Molly and I, the fact that we have so many loyal followers.
It makes a huge difference.
I mean, 1,000 on Instagram.
1,000 followers.
Yeah, Molly's very pleased about that. it's just, I just think it's utterly, it's so heartwarming that people take the trouble to write, to follow us, to, you know, do all the things that I suppose we always hoped they would, but never perhaps thought.
Yeah, so it's an absolute treat.
It is. But this time, this week, we decided that, I think perhaps because I get sometimes a bit overwhelmed.
I couldn't handle it anymore. I said, can we do something a bit less gloomy?
Yeah. And to be fair, I agreed wholeheartedly with Molly, because sometimes the sheer darkness threatens to overwhelm me.
I told my friend Megan, she wasn't very impressed. She's into the gloomy content. I was like, just one episode.
Yeah. Well, this is our 102nd, isn't it?
Yes. Third, I think, because the first one we recorded, then did another, then we've done another, so this would be...
Okay, so in 103...
103.
This is the one with perhaps less dark content.
Yeah. We thought it would be jollier to do something a bit off-piste. Well, no, because we've always been interested in the link between fiction and fact.
Yes, very much so. And indeed, so Mo suggested to me that perhaps we ought to talk about crime fiction rather than crime fact just once.
I just said maybe you could pick us your top five detectives, I think I said. But I don't know what you've ended up with.
Well, I actually have ended up with... They're not all detectives, but they're all in crime fiction.
Okay.
Well, obviously... No one who loves crime and crime fiction doesn't love Sherlock Holmes, I suppose, is everyone's favourite, probably.
Yeah.
My particular favourite is the first, A Study in Scarlet. But Hound of the Baskervilles, if you look back at any of them, the full-length ones, not just the short stories.
Also, if you want to hear Geoffrey reading some of Study in Scarlet, you can go back to our episode just at the beginning of lockdown.
In March, yes. It was fair to say, however, that Conan Doyle, of course, who wrote Sherlock Holmes, had been inspired by a previous writer, Edgar Allan Poe, who'd created a detective called C. Auguste Dupin.
I did Poe at university, in fact. Murder, I loved it.
The Murder in the Rue Morgue. That was the first real detective in crime fiction, and people forget it. It's sad because, you know, everybody thinks it all started with Sherlock Holmes. It didn't. He was there first. And of course, if we're going to talk about great detectives, we cannot but mention Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
Played on television by our dear friend David Suchet.
Now Sir David Suchet.
My particular favourite is the ABC murders.
I knew you'd say that.
Because it's just so beautiful, beautifully constructed.
It's all about the stockings.
Yeah. But the first book in which he appears is A Mysterious Affair at Stiles.
Which I listened to the other day, actually.
Yeah.
I discovered on my phone, I didn't know I still had them, that I have like hours and hours of Poirot audiobooks on my phone.
Well, I've got the audiobook of... Poirot and Me.
Yeah, how have you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I should listen to that.
Which I wrote with David.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, moving along a little. I'm a tremendous fan of Raymond Chandler, and of course his detective Philip Marlowe. He first appeared in The Big Sleep, which is almost impenetrable. I mean, you don't really know who did what to whom and by why. But my favourite, my personal favourite, is Farewell, My Lovely, which is the second of the Marlowe novels. And the interesting thing about Chandler is that he was born in Chicago, but educated at Dulwich College in London, and then went back to California.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and by some strange coincidence, at one point, I had a doctor in Portland Place called Donald Rao, wonderful man, whose father had been Chandler's doctor in London. And Chandler was a fantastic hypochondriac. He was always ringing up Donald's father complaining about something or other. Oh, I've got this, I've got that. It's you know, one of those little vignettes I've always thought. At one point, in fact, I remember discussing this with Peter Riddle, who's now chairman of the governors at Dulwich College. We believe that P.G. Wodehouse and Chandler were in the same form at Dulwich.
No.
In fact, they weren't.
Okay.
They'd missed by only a summer holiday. They both taught Latin by the same Latin master in the same classroom, but they didn't
cross over.
They missed each other by a single summer holiday. But I still think that's a wonderful piece of kind of remote knowledge,
cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And it shows how much, and you would know this better even than I, how much Latin can illuminate people who write English prose.
I did a lot of classics. Not very well.
But never mind. You do appreciate it, though, don't you?
Yeah.
You know? So I thought that would be... Those are the beginnings. And I thought, well, perhaps I should go back and look at some modern ones.
Okay. So you picked out some books that we can recommend to our listeners if they haven't...
If they haven't already got them. Yeah. I've got three. They're all by my absolute favourites. Two Americans and one Englishman, or a Scot anyway. They're all new. They're all just out or coming out. The first is James Lee Burke and his latest book, featuring Detective Dave Robichaux. It's called A Private Cathedral.
Is James Robichaux his... I've never read any... Dave Robichaux his detective who,
yes,
throughout all of his books?
Yeah, well, he's written one or two others, but he is the principal detective. And he has a wonderful sidekick called Cleet Purcell.
And has this been dramatised?
Don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. It might have been, I can't remember.
Okay.
But one of the things that I always love about James Lee Burke is that he's got this way of just grabbing you. You know, absolute grabbing you. He just has that uncanny knack. Because... Let me just read a tiny bit. After you're through with the long night of the soul, or after it's through with you, you're never the same. Earthly fears disappear like a great weight removed from a scale. You have no inclination to argue or hold grudges. Reticence becomes a way of life. It's hard to stay awake during an average conversation. He is very, very, very good. And this is a particularly good book involving a kind of Romeo and Juliet theme and an old gangster and going back over old...
Can I have a look?
Do, darling. I heartily recommend, if you've never tried James Lee Burke, please do. He is, for me, utterly sensational. I think at one point I recommended him in a whole set of books I recommended for lockdown.
Oh, when we did our little video things.
Yes.
If you go on our Instagram and you go into the saved stories, we've got all of the recommendations that Jeffrey made during lockdown for books, movies, TV, old films, new films.
Yeah. So I think I recommended...
And Tips for Surviving Isolation.
Yeah, I recommended a book called Heaven's Prisoners, which was the second of the Robbie Shue novels, but there are many others, all of which I heartily recommend. All right, the second book of my modern ones is Ian Rankin. Well,
who doesn't love Rebus?
Who couldn't love Detective Inspector John Rebus?
There's been a murder.
No, now retired.
A murder.
And been forced to move out of his flat. Oh, mind you, he doesn't move far. He only moves from the second floor to the first floor, to the ground floor. Rebus doesn't change his spots.
For anyone who doesn't know, Rebus is a detective based in Scotland.
In Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Hence, murder.
Murder. I think I called in this on the back of the cover, this one. Rebus is one of the British crime writing's greatest characters, alongside Holmes, Poirot and Morse.
Yeah, he is. I love Rebus.
And this is another brilliant one. He's in a bad mood.
Very well portrayed by Ken Stott.
Indeed. I talked to Ken about him on a number of occasions. Ken, there's something about Ken which is very like him. John Hannah, who also tried
Hannah
didn't
did
work.
It. Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't grumpy enough.
Stott's right for it.
You know, but Ken is just that wonderful kind of...
Yeah.
Gnarled.
Yeah, he's a good one for it.
Yeah. But Rebus, as ever, I mean, this one, the new one, which is just coming out, is called A Song for the Dark Times. And it is another Rebus. It is extraordinary. His old sidekick and Siobhan Clark is helping him move flat because he's moving down to the ground floor. And he doesn't want her there. He wants her to go back to work. You know, she's now a detective inspector, and she wants to help him, and it's a typical kind of grumpy Rebus opening. she's just unbelievable. But I like it because it's kind of crisp and at the same time utterly human. Rebus kind of encapsulates all of us. He's the kind of man who perhaps we'd like to be, not all that gregarious, very insular, but also somehow supremely aware of everything he encounters. And anyways, now being forced to retire, and so he sends Siobhan Clark back to work, and of course then begins to interfere as he would always do. It is vintage Rebus, and the charming thing about Ian Rankin is A, that he's an incredibly nice man, B, that he has not lost any of that clarity that he always had. All the writing has always had, it's beautiful. And eloquent, and
Edinburgh is a good town for setting murder in, isn't it?
The new and the old town.
It's got all the necessaries. It's the Jekyll and Hyde of it.
It's no surprise that Stevenson's inspiration for Jekyll and Hyde came from living in Edinburgh. You know, the new town, everything's fine on the surface, and the old town full of cobbled alleyways and dark bits, and there's something very special in that way about
Edinburgh. I love Edinburgh.
Me too. Always have. Lived there for a little bit. And Mo's brother Dan went to art college there.
So he lived there for a long time.
He lived there for a long time.
He's got more degrees than all of the rest of the family put together.
Yes, I think we could all add all our degrees together and he's got more.
Cool.
He's moving with his dog Brillo. It's a wonderful name for a dog.
This is Rebus back now, Rebus. Not my brother.
No, this is Rebus. Rebus, that's us, the older man said from the kitchen doorway. Rebus approached him, digging banknotes from his pocket. Clark watched as Brillo came trotting up to her, settling on his haunches, eyes expectant. "You going to promise me you'll look after him?" Clark asked. The dog angled its head as if considering how best to answer.
Cute. Betsy would do that.
I wonder.
Betsy's sleeping.
And there's a new one.
Uh-huh. Thank you. I'll put all of these on the Instagram so you can find them.
Yes.
And I'm sure we can do something clever, like put them in the show notes or something.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. The last of my fictional detectives isn't really a detective.
Uh-huh.
He's a lawyer.
I love a legal thriller.
Yeah, me too. And this is a lawyer who burst onto the scene. Michael Connelly's invention. Michael Connelly, the creator of Detective Harry Bosch, one of the great modern detectives.
Bosch is a series on Amazon, isn't
Amazon,
it?
Yes. In fact, Connelly's executive producer, I think, on it. But this is the third of the Lincoln Lawyer, as the first one was called, Michael Connelly's creation, Mickey Haller. And Mickey Haller, you may remember, was made into a film called The Lincoln Lawyer, starring Samuel L. Jackson and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
I have to say, he goes from strength to strength. I call him one of the world's greatest crime writers, I think he is. But I particularly like Mickey Haller, who's always getting into terrible scrapes. Always. And this time, he gets into an absolutely appalling scrape.
What kind of a scrape does he get into?
Well, I'll tell you. The book's called The Law of Innocence. And Haller is celebrating. He hasn't had a drink for 5 years. He's celebrating in the local country club with a number of others, because the tradition is, if you win a case against the odds, you go and buy all the other guys, all the other defence lawyers, a drink in the country club. So he's gone to the country club. And he's quite cheerful. I mean, doesn't drink, doesn't have any alcohol. He's driving home, gets in the car, drives home. A police cruiser comes up behind him and pulls him over. Haller quite rightly says, "Well, hang on a minute, what's this about? I haven't done anything." "Step out of the car." "No, but I haven't done, what's the problem?" So he says, "Will you follow me, sir?" And he goes round to the back of the car. "You haven't got a number plate." What? "No, there's no number plate on the back of your car." I said, "Well, it must be a prank. Somebody must have done it." And then the officer says, "And is that blood I can see on the trunk?" And Haller says, "No, of course. Would you open the trunk?"
Oh, no.
And there's a dead body in the trunk.
How's he going to get out of that one?
Especially as he knows perfectly well he's going to go straight to jail and do not pass go.
Mm-hmm. Do not collect £200.
No. If you know about Monopoly in this country, I suppose it's $200 in the United States.
I'm sure it's whatever currency it's whatever. 200 of.
Yeah. But it's such a wonderful premise. And I really do adore Mickey Haller. I watched the Lincoln Lawyer movie again recently, and it is terrifically good. And what I like about it, it's about like Jake Briggins, who is the hero of John Grisham's latest novel, A Time for Mercy. Jake Briggins first appeared in his first book, A Time to Kill, as a young lawyer, defending a man who killed the men who raped his young daughter. Wonderful, wonderful story. The first story he ever wrote while he was still practicing as a lawyer. And it wasn't published, in fact, until after his first big hit, The Firm, which was then made into a movie with Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
But Briggins, who's just making a reappearance in this new book, his third featuring him, is it's again, I like lost causes. And this time Briggins is asked to defend a boy of 14 who is the child of a mother of two. He has an elder sister who's moved into the house of a sheriff's deputy who is very abusive. And the boy, one night, convinced that his mother's been killed, shoots the deputy dead in his bed. No one wants to defend him because, of course, you can't kill a policeman and get away with it. And Briggs keeps on saying, but he deserves to be defended, you know. No, you defend him, we'll kill you. It's a very, very good premise. And very interesting, too, because there's so much going on about it. I think those are my favourites. I haven't included so many. DCI Banks, you know, so many really good British. I haven't included Morse. I haven't included, you know, some that I...
Miss Marple?
Miss Marple, I've never liked as much as Poirot.
Bit too twee.
A bit twee, yes, a bit crochet, but lovely. You know, it's very nice. But what about you? What are your favourites, Mo?
Poirot definitely is my favourite. You know, I'm a big fan, Charles Paris.
Okay.
I've never read the books, but I listen to the audio on Radio 4 a lot, and Bill Nighy plays a kind of failing actor called Charles Paris, and every time he goes onto a production, someone ends up being murdered and he ends up having to work out who it was.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, like, his relationship with his agent. I suppose it kind of appeals
to great.
Me.
Cause it's not, it's not.
I don't even know who writes those. It's terrible.
Oh, I don't think
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
I can't because my phone's... Not
phone's
me.
Working at the moment, yes. But perhaps it's also worth saying there are a couple of really, really good true crime books, one of which I dug out, which is we have mentioned before, which is the one that was made into a Netflix series, Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, that's about, so good.
About the rape case.
Unbelievable, so good.
Yeah, but I thought that was a very good example of a true crime book.
I'll Be Gone in the Dark. We really both enjoyed that a lot. The
yes.
East Coast killer, Golden State killer, whatever you want to call him. True crime book.
There's a very good book on the Black Dahlia case in the United States, written by Pierre Eatwell. Marvellous. Might finally have got to the bottom of what actually happened in that famous case in 1946 in Los Angeles. And I'm rather fond of a couple of... forensic scientists' books.
Oh, yeah.
One Good is shout. Called When the Dogs Don't Bark by Professor Angela Gallup, and the other one's called Unnatural Causes by Dr. Richard Shepherd. And they're both excellent for giving you the insight into what they're trying to do and what the forensic science means. And Shepherd's book, Unnatural Causes, begins with him going to Hungerford in the wake of the massacre. It's very, very interesting and illuminating, to put it politely. But what other things, Mo, did you... I mean, what other...
I don't think I read that many other ones. I was just thinking about all of the crime TV shows and films I've watched over the years.
Well, one of the ones, very out of fashion now, is Gideon of the Yard.
I don't know that one.
Written by John Creasy. Inspector Gideon, a sort of Morse of his day, rather troubled, on the road to retirement, and at one point was made into a very good film starring Jack Hawkins as Gideon, Inspector Gideon. I've always thought John Creasy, nobody ever remembers now.
No, I've never heard of him.
Well, there are so many like that, aren't there, that they just sort of disappear beneath the waves. They kind of
they do, but then so many here that haven't, like. How many books do you think Rankin and James Lee Burke and what's the other man called? Harris? Is he the famous one?
Oh, you mean Thomas Harris?
Maybe.
Silence of the Lambs?
No, I mean someone else.
Okay.
But I mean, a lot of these crime authors write again and again and again.
Oh,
and
they
again,
do.
Don't they?
Absolutely. People can't get enough. It's wonderful. In a way, because it underlines how much interest there is.
I know, which underlines how much interest there is in our normal subject matter.
Yes.
And the fact we've been able to do 100 podcasts.
More than 100.
More than 100 podcasts.
Yes.
And that we'll be able to keep doing them. We will never run out of material.
No, we will not.
So, there have been several recent cases I've noticed about those two that lady and her daughter who was killed, and then the lady and her baby that was killed.
Yes.
In the like last 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes. Well, they're all live, so we couldn't really talk about
them. I know
we
can't talk about them. But I just mean there's a couple
of suggestions. Some of the suggestions that were very sweetly sent in by our listeners for cases we might do.
Yeah, we will.
One or two of them we couldn't do because there are still new proceedings in action, and we can't talk about something at that point because we could be accused of prejudicing the possibility of a fair trial, which is perfectly fair.
Do you ever wonder if people in prison listen to our podcast?
I'm absolutely sure they do.
Do you think if you are in prison, do write in?
Well, I don't see why they shouldn't, though, darling. Particularly if they mentions their name.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I just think it's interesting. Do you think? I suppose there are some murderers and people who commit crime who just want to know all about themselves or if people are talking about them.
Yeah. Well, as we've said to each other many times, there is one of the great incentives for a man, and it's almost always a man, to become a serial killer, is that they will be famous. It is one of the motivations. Sad though that may be to say. But I thought one thing I thought we might finish on, and then we'll just talk a bit. I dug out a book that I've always loved by my old friend John Mortimer, now sadly dead. And it's very close to my heart, this. The book is called The Summer of a Dormouse, A Year of Growing Old Disgracefully. And John, who was the most delightful man, I first met him when he defended the Oz Trio against obscenity trial, against obscene trial, and he was an absolutely wonderful man, very, very funny, and I couldn't resist this. I got it out specially. I couldn't resist it. The time will come in your life, he writes, it will almost certainly come, when the voice of God will thunder at you from a cloud. From this day forth thou shalt not be able to put on thine own socks. To the young, to the middle-aged even, this may seem a remote and improbable accident that only happens to other people. It has to be said, however, that the day will most probably dawn when your pale foot will wander through the air, incapable of hitting the narrow opening of a suspended sock. Those fortunate enough to live with families will call out for help. The situation is, in minor ways, humiliating and comical. It's a law of script writing, and John wrote many scripts and done very good plays, that scenes get shorter and shorter, the action speeds up towards the end. In childhood, afternoons spread out for years. For the old, the years flicker past like the briefest of afternoons. The playwright Christopher Fry, now 93, told me that after the age of 80, you seem to be having breakfast every 5 minutes. These film scenes, building to an inevitable climax, tend less to tragedy than farce. Dying is a matter of slapstick and pratfalls. The aging process is not gradual or gentle. It rushes you up, pushes you over, and runs off laughing. No one should grow old who isn't ready to appear ridiculous. And I think that's absolutely beautiful.
That's very good. Is that how you feel?
I do. I do. I have to sit down to put my socks on now. I mean,
you stand up to put your socks on.
Oh, I used to be able to do all that. Can't, I have to sit down for everything now. It's terrible.
I have to sit down to put my socks on. And
well, goodness. Anyway, darling.
Do not worry.
Yeah. Well, there we are. It's a slight difference of tone, but not very much.
Yeah. Well, I hope you'll bear with us, listeners, but we just fancied doing something a bit less.
Yes.
Strenuous.
No, it's not so much not strenuous, but not quite as dark.
Yeah.
And I'm. And because I spend a lot of my life reading crime and thrillers, partly because I review them for the Daily Mail, but because it's a kind of change of pace, which is very...
Yeah, hopefully you'll get some recos in there too. You might have a... Have
but otherwise,
a
darling, what have you got coming up this week? Much the same as before?
Yes,
same old,
same we will.
Old. Same old, same old. Same horse, different jockey. Same jockey, different horse.
Same jockey, different horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have anything.
Any great news on any front? Not particularly.
I mean, just fingers crossed everybody can keep working.
Well, that's I've got my fingers crossed. I'm constantly have my fingers crossed.
Who knows?
Who knows? But we're doing our best.
We're doing our best to get from A to B. So, yeah, people are working, which means a huge amount to me. So I'm just trying to keep them in employ.
Well, you managed to keep me in employ from time to time, which is absolutely wonderful, I assure you.
Try my best.
But, well...
Well, thank you, Dad, for that. I really enjoyed that, and I found it a bit of a respite.
Yes, okay.
That no one got bludgeoned to death in the bath today.
No.
Which is a good thing. So I will, as always, say thank you to all the people who help us. Thank you to Sam Brain, our producer, to Audio Boom for hosting us, my brother Dan, who does the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, and to Jeffrey, because he does all the hard work. And to you, the listeners, without you, we're nothing.
Absolutely. And I always say at this point, and we ought to thank Molly, whose idea this was. And I agree with her. We must thank you, the listeners, for being with us. And as I often say, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.
All right, thank you to all the people that help us, our producer Sam Brain, Audio Boom for hosting us, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Jeffrey, who does all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Oh, I think we should thank Molly. She's the genesis of this great adventure, and I owe her a great deal, and I also owe everyone who listens to us an enormous debt. It's such a privilege to do it. And as I say at the end of most of these, and I mean every word of it, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.